Hi, everybody. My name is Amy, and I'm an addict, and I am so happy to see all these new faces here today. It's really, really, really nice. I don't crave today, and that's probably the most important thing that you're going to hear come out of my mouth in this whole share, because that is huge, and I don't ever want to forget that. I don't ever want to forget the hell of obsessing and craving drugs, of becoming a person that I really did not like because of it, and how hard it was for me to get here today. So yeah, I don't crave. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's so freaking nice. I wake up and I don't crave, and I haven't, thrown up in a toilet bowl in 5 years, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, I'm going to just kind of real quickly qualify so that I can get to the good part, which is how secular recovery works for me. I came to the world of drugs and alcohol a very broken person, with, like a lot of us, there was childhood trauma. There was alcoholism, there was neglect, social ostracism, bullying. A whole lot of ugliness. So, I was a very fearful, insecure person with a very dark view of life when, at the very young age of 12, I came to the world of drugs and alcohol, very broken person, very pained and troubled, and drugs made it all okay. Drugs made it all okay. I was 12 when I first started using drugs, and don't think that I had a clean day from the age of 12 to 27. I tell my story in an odd way. I think of myself as having gone through, I refer to my, this is my first recovery, when I was 27. I got clean through conventional AA in New York a long, long time ago. and I stayed clean for 18 years. However, I always had a lot of issues with many aspects of the program, and not just the religiosity of it all, but a lot of the jargon. And so I argued a lot, and I didn't really feel 100% like I fit in or belonged. And so I kind of drifted away, and I moved from New York and came out here to California. And I never really reconnected with the program. So I stayed clean for 18 years, and I had, and then at in like at the age of like 40 or something, I had a massive ruptured disc, and I had back surgery, and they sent me home with a bottle of Vicodin and 6 months of refill, and this was before the epidemic. And I'd always struggled with depression, so it's funny, different people respond differently to these to this drug, but I was one of the people for whom it created an immense sense of euphoric well-being, and there was just absolutely no way I wasn't going to allow myself to experience that. And because I had drifted away from the program, I really convinced myself that it was okay. And actually, for 2 years, I used in relative moderation, if you can call daily use moderate, but it didn't immediately spiral out of control. Ultimately, it did. Of course, it did. And I remember very well the day that I took my one little pill at the end of my workday, and I didn't get high. And I remember it so well because it was panic. And so, no problem, I'll start taking two. And then from there on, it was a much quicker acceleration, and it was really, really bad. I stayed out for 12 years. I'm really lucky to be alive today at all. This was right before the epidemic began. And this is classic story I love to tell about, like, the epidemic started, and every time I heard stories about the epidemic, either in the news or on the radio, my reaction was, oh my fucking God, this really sucks. How am I going to get my drugs? It was never, oh my God, this is a crisis. All these people are dying. It was just like, this is so bad for me. Okay, so let me fast forward here. So yeah, it snowballed. By the end, I was scoring illicit drugs, up advanced to hydrocodone, couldn't get high, overdosing all the time. I probably overdosed about a half a dozen times. And it was literally a matter of either you stop or you die. And that's when I finally came back to the program. And it was really hard because this is before I'd found secular. And I really, really struggled with it. It felt like the meetings I went to were drenched in HP and it was not working for me, HP being higher power. But I managed to find a meeting, an NA meeting, a woman's meeting, where they kind of tolerated me talking about being an atheist and me having a secular interpretation of the program. And then about a year into it, I a woman in the meeting helped me start the Sunday Atheist Recover 2 meeting, and it was a secular meeting. And at that time, it was small and it was hard, but we got that meeting started. And then gradually over the years, this movement has grown, and there are lots of secular meetings. So I have to say, secular saved my life. There's so much good in the program mixed in with all the stuff that doesn't work for me. A lot of the jargon and the basically what I consider to be a Christian program, and I'm an atheist, so that just doesn't work for me. But there's so much good in there, and so the past 5 years has been this amazingly liberating journey of sorting out the wheat from the chaff and figuring out what are the strengths of the program and how can I pluck it all apart and put together a program that really works for me. And I got a sponsor for the first time, and I worked the steps through five for the first time ever because I'd never done any of that in recovery. And I've just grown so much and been able to embrace the program so much more than I ever did, and it's been amazing. So, the first thing that comes up for me in secular is, so if it's not all about a higher power, how does it work? How does it work? And the first thing I did was I allowed myself, gave myself permission to throw HP out as a pretty much useless concept to me, except as it pertains to community and fellowship. I'm just going to take a minute to read something to you from a book that saved my life, called Common Sense Recovery. And the chapter is called The Real Higher Power, and it says, what guides and sustains us on a day-by-day basis is peer support, empathy, mentor guidance, and emotional reinforcement by group membership. There are reams of data from social psychology and evolutionary biology and a host of other disciplines that attest to the essential role played by peer groups and societies in determining both our values and our action choices in shaping our thoughts and behaviors. When I plug into a fellowship like NA, I am immersing myself in a like-minded tribe which shares the all-important common goals and values of sustainable recovery. I am given the power I need to live more successfully as a clean individual. When I make a habit of regularly hanging out with you guys in a relatively teachable and humble state, I am more often than not restored to sanity. And that is the first three steps in a nutshell. And I believe that. I think that, if you are coming to meetings and you're relatively open-minded and you're hanging out here, you are working the first three steps to perfection. That's how it works for me. So yeah, one of the things that I did when I first got clean and was struggling with my relationship to the 12-step program was I opened up some of the literature with a black magic marker and I crossed out every reference to higher power or spirituality as I read it. Everyone. And I'll tell you something, it was amazing because what happened was in every paragraph, almost every paragraph, there was some reference to some spiritual principle that underlined what they were talking about. And so when I was done with that experiment, I was like, that's it. That's it. It's all about the spiritual principles underlying each step. And, whether it's humility or compassion or being of service or getting out of self-absorption, all of which are really important to me. Even HP is basically about humility. You don't ever have to use the phrase HP. I just need to have humility, especially in early recovery when I need to admit that I'm defeated and I need to ask for help. And those things require humility. So I determined that for me, what they were calling a spiritual life was a principled life, a life according to certain principles like honesty. It's really important, not just in terms of what I say to you and other people, but how I look at myself, being really honest with me about me, humility, acceptance, that's willingness, compassion, self-awareness, tolerance, and a big one for me, gratitude. And you know what? That's a lifetime of work right there for me. I mean, I can spend the rest of my life working on those principles. So for me, there's no need to get all overly complicated and woo-woo about it because that's it right there. And it's not that I'm trying to be a saint. It's just that my life goes better when I use those in my life. And when my life goes better, I'm a little bit more grounded and less likely to resort to drugs as a coping mechanism. And so, the other piece on how it works for me is that I come here and you guys help me learn how to live because I missed that class. Like, I didn't really learn some of the basic stuff, mostly the coping tools, how to cope. I've learned the skill of active listening here, which makes my relationships go better. I've learned how to start, or I continue to learn how to let things go instead of spinning out and making myself crazy over stuff. I've learned a little bit about self-love. I'm 1 year off smoking. That is the biggest act of self-love I've ever done. And I've learned how to self-validate instead of constantly relying on others around me to validate me, which causes my relationships to just go a whole lot better. And so then the other piece I'll say about how it works for me is, again, I'd like to read something out of this book, if you don't mind. So for me, and everyone's different, I found that a lot of what recovery was about was kind of like reprogramming myself, reprogramming my habits of mind and my ways of reacting. So in this book, Common Sense Recovery, there's a chapter all about the slogan. I know slogans, fake it till you make it. However, well, actually, this one is you that we cannot think our way into right living, but we can live our way into right thinking. I'll say that one again. We cannot think our way into right living, but we can live our way into right thinking. And that's what, we mean when we say it's a program of action. You just do the next right thing. Get out of your head, do the next right thing. And this simple statement encompasses one of the essential principles of sustained recovery. As irreligious as it may sound, much of recovery simply boils down to behavioral conditioning. We are what we do. The most important way to change character traits is to consistently practice different behaviors. The thoughts and motivations behind our behaviors will follow suit given time and consistent effort. This is the gist of the common expression, fake it till you make it. The most obvious example is, of course, that treatment for addiction primarily consists of not taking the first drug. If we can do this for long enough, the cravings weaken until they are merely thoughts. then the thoughts too weaken, so long as we don't let them build a nest or put down roots. They come with less frequency, with less intensity, until one day we realize that they have been replaced by a new and different set of thoughts, values, beliefs, and behaviors. Once the fundamental problem of craving has been solved, we are freed, readied, and empowered with these tools, this secular recipe to change other areas of our lives as well. Do the next right thing for long enough, and sure enough, your thoughts, desires, and values can all be radically transformed. I used to say in one of the meetings I went to, I don't believe in God, but I do believe in our capacity to radically transform ourselves. And that's kind of what recovery helps us to do. I mean, here's an example. I know this is a step meeting and I haven't talked about the steps, but here's an example of what I would see the difference between conventional and secular. When I was in conventional, in early recovery, all I cared about was how do I deal with my cravings? How do I get through the day with this craving and obsession dogging me every step I take? And in conventional, I was told to pray to my higher power to relieve me of the obsession to use, which meant absolutely nothing to me. In conventional, I was told things like, it's hard and you just got to hang in there. So go to meetings and don't drink is the AA expression. I turned it into go to movies and don't think. Get out of your head. Stay busy, stay connected, go to lots of meetings, but you are just going to have to tough it out. There's no way around it. But if you hang in there, the cravings will pass. And I had sticky notes up on all my win all over my house. Freedom from obsession. Freedom from obsession. That's like just hang in there one day at a time. And one day at a time is, a profound truism. But I really, really appreciated it when I was told it's tough and you just got to tough it out, because that made a whole lot more sense than let's go pray to your higher power to relieve you of the obsession to use. Let's see. I think that kind of covers it. I'm not. I'm a work in progress, and that's one of the things that I need to always remember about recovery is that it's a process. I kind of think of it almost as a spiral staircase. It's like I kind of go back around and revisit the same information, but each time I revisit it, I've grown a little more and I've learned a little more. The 12th step is talks about having had a spiritual awakening. Well, I think that I have these little mini awakenings all the time in recovery, where it's like all of a sudden someone just turned on the lights and I get this amazing insight into myself, and into why I do what I do and feel the way I feel. And it's a journey, and it takes time. My kind of takeaway message for any newcomers in the room is to give yourself time, give this time, and to find your path and your way, because there is no single right way to do recovery. And nobody else can really tell you what your way is. You can listen to what all of us have to say, and then you put your program together that works for you. And perseverance, somebody else said this in a meeting, perseverance is more important than knowledge or intelligence. It's like you may not understand how it works. You may not even understand what the fuck everyone in these rooms is talking about, but you just hang on and hang in and persevere. And, I think it was someone else I heard say, I heard it in the year one, I understood it in year five, So I think that's all I've got. And wow, am I actually quitting early? I am. I didn't use up all my time. That's amazing, because I usually have more than enough to say. So I want to hear from all of you. Thanks for letting me share. Thanks for asking, Christina.